Are we recording now?
We're recording now.
Oh my god. It's Mom's Basement Podcast, episode 4.
And
four.
The date is,
What the hell?
What is the date?
Oh, it's the 20th of
August.
August
2010.
2010, just for posterity there. Oh. But man, you forgot something. You dropped
Mom's
the ball.
Basement.
There you
go.
Just a little
drop
late.
The fucking ball. It's only episode 4 and it's already gone to shit. Fuck it.
No,
we're done.
It's not a ritual, yeah. I'll give them that one, but if you forget one more time, what the fuck?
Well, last time, when I got kind of testy about it, he was like, I'm going to do this every fucking time.
I'll do it again, just in Mom's Basement.
There you go.
There you go.
Okay, so we had no idea what we were going to do. We promised you an actual play last time. You will get an actual play soon. The problem is we need a fourth player to do an actual play, and... our fourth player has proven unreliable, and I can't imagine why wouldn't someone want to play with us?
Yeah, I wonder why.
No, but we've got a seriously though. Yeah. There's another player coming, and we should have a one or even multiple actual play podcasts within the next week or so.
Yep.
In the meantime, we decided to do a sort of random conversational podcast because like, what do people enjoy? What do people enjoy more than hearing three assholes they know nothing about prattle on about topics they could care less about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously.
So the way we wanted to facilitate conversation is we have a piece of paper here. We're going to each write some topics on this paper, if we can think of any, gaming-related topics, and put them in a hat, and we're going to draw them out of the hat. And what I was thinking was we'll set 10-minute timer for each topic, and then when it goes off, we'll draw a new topic from the hat.
That'll work.
Okay. So let me set our first... Someone want to tear this paper up?
Yeah, I could have got that.
Somebody
tear it up next to the microphone so you can get the paper tearing special effect. Yeah, we're high-tech here, yeah. No, we totally just dubbed that shit in. We got the sound effect guy up here. And,
yes, sir.
Tools, I have... Tools, timer,
blur.
Set, hours, 00, minutes, 10, okay.
So for those of you who are just tuning in now, this is Mom's Basement. We're three adult men broadcasting from the shed in back of my mommy's house.
But don't worry, we don't think this is like guerrilla radio and it's secret or anything, because it's not.
No.
But dude, we're so indie, we're so, like, this is so avant-garde and so...
So bohemian.
Yeah, bohemian, yes. That's a good word.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, we're just three losers who, were in his mom's shed.
Yep.
And that's this... But we have a mission here. We want to have the most amateur... unprofessional,
piece
pointless,
of shit.
Piece of shit gaming podcast on the internet.
Yeah.
On the internet full of unprofessional, piece of shit, amateurish podcasts.
And to prove our point, we only have two writing utensils for three people.
That's how low our budget is.
We can't afford this shit.
Right. Rudy and Mike are going to have to share a mechanical pencil. And I can't even use a mechanical pencil.
Do you have an idea, Mike? Because you can write first if you...
Yes, I actually believe I do.
Right.
Keep your ideas secret until they're drawn out of the hat.
Oh.
Tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock.
Tick-tock.
Ah!
Okay, now it's my turn to write with a pencil.
Boy, there's going to be a lot of empty, dead, tedious space here. So we're gaining points for lack of professionalism.
Yep.
And we're not probably going to edit this out.
Yeah. But, oh, no, there's no way. We don't even know how.
Cross chop city.
For those at home, you can just consider this something like an awkward pause or
that lasts a 15 fart. To 20 minutes.
You can probably skip ahead like 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, one person's already got theirs, which was a miracle, may I add.
Okay. Randomize.
Shaking the hat. By the way, this is a Nintendo hat with a Triforce on it.
Zelda.
Donated by Mike to the cause. Mike, who every day has an excellent vintage gaming t-shirt or hat.
Yes, sir.
Not really, but I'd like one.
Let's see what I just pulled. Oh, I just pulled my own topic out of the hat.
Okay, randomize.
Randomize. Somebody else randomize. It.
Okay, that'll work. Ah.
I think this is Mike's. Sensitive issues at the table.
That's actually mine.
Oh, that's Rudy's. No, oh, wait, let's start the timer. Start, okay. Now, what do you consider to be a sensitive issue, then? Yeah. What are you talking about?
Like, I'm talking about things that are sensitive in the mainstream, or maybe not so much. The mainstream.
So you don't necessarily mean something that's sensitive to someone seated at the table?
No.
Okay.
So things that such as religion or politics or
pedophilia.
Yes, pedophilia, obviously, but I mean like gays.
Gays, yeah. Sometimes gays.
Depending on who's at the table.
Yeah, exactly.
Depending on who's at the table.
Well, no, I mean, isn't that the point though? It's always going to depend on who's at the table.
Yeah.
And I can't
remember really having any sensitive issues at the table.
Well, I can remember moments when we were at the table and someone else discovered they had a sensitive issue and someone ended up leaving the table or the game disbanded as a result.
Let's talk about one of those encounters.
Yeah.
Since that would probably be the most fun. I remember with even D&D there was that incident.
Right. This was an online D&D session.
Yeah.
Which incident? There were several incidents.
Talking about the incident that ended Cashew's game, the one that basically...
Well, that, the issue at hand there. Well, it wasn't even really pedophilia, per se.
No.
But it involved characters that were underage performing kind of a burlesque. It wasn't even a strip show. It, was
it wasn't really a sexual act.
And my argument was it wasn't... First of all, the character in mind was supposed to be, you weren't supposed to be like, boy, like, that little kid's putting on a burlesque.
Well,
pretty
let's
hot.
Start by introducing the character. Since it's your character, what exactly is the character, the nature of the character?
Well, you mean Millie?
Yeah.
Well, Millie is a teenager who's kind of,
it's kind of loose.
Well, she's not. Not in actuality, she isn't. What she really is awkward and socially, you know, dysfunctional.
Yeah.
But she compensates with it, you know, by bragging and by having a, you know, inflated opinion of herself and by making displays. And, you know, at that age, one of the things, I mean, when you're a teenager, one of the things that you brag about is, like, my sexual prowess, you know. Yeah. I've got all of these boyfriends or I've got all these girlfriends.
Yeah.
When in actuality, they haven't had any experiences like that.
Yeah.
And that was the point of the display. It was supposed to be ironic, you know. this character. It was supposed to be kind of like the scene in Little Miss Sunshine, where you feel uncomfortable, and you're like, this isn't right, this isn't what's supposed to be happening, and that's what the character is supposed to do. Makes people feel uncomfortable about her talking that way, and then it's almost kind of a conservative character, because you say, well, what kind of society encourages a kid to behave in that way? And the reality is, it's our fucking society. Talk it to any middle school or high school student you encounter, and that's the only one of the few topics they're going to be talking about.
Captain Morgan.
Yeah, that's right.
That's one of the other ones.
But that's the reality of the character, really. But this is a character who, you know, would put on a ridiculous amount of makeup and think it was cool to do that, or drops, you know, goofy pop cultural references, always in a way that's awkward and stupid, but that she thinks is hip and cool.
So now, what was the nature of the incident?
Yes.
Well, that was the nature of the incident, is this character put on kind of a burlesque show.
But who was involved on the other side of the incident?
On the other side of the incident were some players we hadn't played with online previously. Right. It was being DM'd by someone who we did know, who did know the character and understood the character and had agreed to allow the character in the game. But there were other people, and they got upset.
Do you think this is an issue of people's comfort zones being stretched too far? Do you think it was too much that we maybe pushed these guys out of their comfort zone? Do you think it was wrong of us to do that, or do you think... Do you think we were in the wrong in pushing them out? Because we were obviously pushing them outside of their comfort zone. And we had known beforehand that maybe they would...
I'm surprised you can ask this question with a straight face.
This is for the camera, bro. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you were a part of that incident as much as I was. You were a participant in it also.
Yeah, that's why I said we.
You were playing a similar character. But I don't know. Well, for one thing, in a situation where the GM rubber stamps a character, I think to some degree it's the GM's responsibility to say, you know, this is the kind of game we're playing tonight, and this is the expectations for play. If it's a game with a GM, obviously if it's a GM-less game, then you have a whole nother scenario.
Right.
But I think there are a couple of ways you could approach this. One would be to say, well, if you have sensitive people in the group, you need to have a discussion beforehand. Either they need to say, these are the issues that I'm sensitive about, and don't go there.
Right.
Or you need to say, well, what issues are you sensitive about? The problem with the latter approach, and I think the latter approach is what's taken by a lot of people in the RPG community, which is, well, if you're going to broach sensitive issues, you need to talk about it before play. You need to tell people.
The burden of proof is kind of on you to...
Yeah,
but the reality is, I mean, who was it who said that who was it who called video games murder simulators?
Jack Thompson.
Jack Thompson.
Yeah, Jack Thompson.
And I mean, we give Jack Thompson a lot of shit. Everyone in the gaming community does. But the reality is, D&D is, in a sense, a murder simulator. You know? You go into these monsters' homes, you may call it a dungeon, but it's their ecosystem, right?
That's where they live.
The environment, I mean, it's Monster Hunter, if you use the popular game line.
Yeah.
And you go in, and a lot of them are sentient, too.
Yeah, like and orcs and goblins.
You break up, you burst into their community on some pretext, and you start... putting people's faces on the curb, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
And that's cool. And no one says, well, you know, today in our D&D session, we're going to be killing some goblins.
Has anybody's house been robbed, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know, guys. I just had a break-in last week. I don't know if I'm ready to tackle this.
Right.
But that becomes from an essence of the player's able to separate himself from the game.
Is anyone living in an ethnically diverse community, and have you ever been the victim of a, you know, racially motivated attack?
Because
when you charge into, you know, the goblin village and as I said, put their faces to the curb and burn down their homes, that's a racially motivated attack.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, you might say, well, the goblins kidnapped the princess or whatever, but... Maybe how many goblins were involved in that? I mean, we talk about all the time in the news. We're talking about civilian casualties. You know, how many, you know, people in Iraq have been the victim who weren't members of the Republican Guard? You know,
sure.
Right. Who weren't even insurgents. And we say, well, that's tragic, that's terrible. And how many of these goblins, when you burst into their city, you know, maybe they were the doctor and they've got a club under their, you know, their cot just in case, and they come out because some, you know, some humans in their village.
Some asshole decided to
stabbing people, ripping shit apart. But that's considered, no one would at the beginning of a session of D&D say, well, there's going to be some killing taking place in this.
Yeah, there's
going to
be a war this time. Any war veterans?
Yeah, any war veterans? Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to deal with PTSD today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they never deal with PTSD.
PTSD, exactly.
And in a lot of ways, that's a lot more callous than, than a lot of what goes on in the game. Because in most cases, most players wouldn't even think of introducing some kind of, you know, sexual content that wasn't 100%, you know, that wasn't like, I go into the tavern and I proposition a wench. Anything more challenging and difficult than that, no one would think of broaching a topic like that without mixing in some, well, how does the victim feel, or what's going on here, making it a little more complex than that. Mm. But yet we approach violence in games.
Yeah.
Just being. And I mean, the comparison, this example that we're talking about actually boiled over into something of a flame war afterwards.
Yeah, a big flame war.
I mean, I think you really have to look at how the players' intent, what their intent is. And this is what I said to the person who was on the opposite end of this. I mean, I said, you're the type of guy who would think that a modest proposal was a cookbook. Because he was taking this as, you know, oh man, this is such an endorsement of you know, underage sexual behavior.
Well, that dude is not cool. May I just say, was taking the game way too goddamn seriously. It's like I was saying, just that little bit that I put in. You have to be able to separate yourself and your emotions from the game itself.
Wow, and that's 10 minutes. And I think Mike ended it on a high note.
Yeah.
So now next topic.
Yep. Let me get the things out of the game. Well, we've got. Oh, you want? Yeah, you can introduce a new one. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Rudy can put a new one in the hat. I'm gonna set a timer again. I mean, I think we could have done an hour-long discussion that topic.
Maybe we
will in the future. Maybe if we actually get this podcast listed and get some comments, they can tell us which of these topics you want to hear more about.
Or if you have some we didn't broach, feel free to suggest them.
Yeah.
You got a new topic, Rudy?
No. Actually, let's just pull out of there for now, because I'll think of one.
Okay. Mike, why don't you pull the next one? You can pull your own if you want.
Yeah.
Since there's only two in there.
I pulled my own. The separation of social groups within RPGs. So, for example, you have your more social RPGs, you have your LARPers, you have your cosplayers, you have your combat-based RPGs, you have your non-serious ones.
And I'm starting the timer now.
Why I wanted to bring this up is why this occurs to be so stratified. How did this get to be such a one group excludes from the other? Although it's not so hardcore, there is very much a separation.
Right, stratification is exactly the word. Why do we exist in a community where one group will be all people looking at tables and rolling dice, you know, one step removed from Warhammer,
right,
while another group will be up and throwing chairs around and grabbing each other and yelling and be hard social LARP, quasi-LARP role players.
And then you got your shunned people, which part cosplay, part, you could even go so far as furry RPGs, which are totally excluded from everybody else.
And they should be.
Yes,
I agree completely. What's wrong with furries, really? I mean, I'm not 100%, I'm not without my variations from the norm. I mean, why object to furry behavior?
I know,
it's just another fetish.
I just object to them because they're like people who run around in cat suits and...
So, my objection is different. It's that they try to take the character out of what they're doing and act as though they are the character while they have the suit on, like, almost permanently. Like, they're affixed to the suit.
So you mean it becomes more persona than a
character? So it's like character. A literal fetish object where the right. suit yeah. becomes...
yeah.
Mm. Kind of like the mask, sort of.
Oh, yeah. And it's... And if I'm not mistaken, it's pretty taboo to even touch... the headpiece.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. But, I mean, I don't know. Why the stratification? I mean, why do we have social stratification, period?
Right.
Because people have different interests and they want different things out of the game. I think it's because RPGs are such a variable thing. I mean, you could take a random sample of 10 different people who played RPGs and ask them, well, what's an RPG? And someone will say, well, it's a game where you roll polyhedral dice and you yeah. slay dragons. And another guy would say, well, it's a dark storytelling experience where you create vampires and you challenge your moral beliefs. And another guy might say, well, you know, it's a chance for you to really examine deep, profound social issues from a totally different perspective. And someone else might say, well, that's what me and my girlfriend do when we want a little variety in bed,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
And that is role-playing. It's such a variable term because you might as well be saying, well, what's acting?
Yeah.
But even more so, since role-playing, it's a game.
Yeah.
But it's... To some people, it's a game. To other people, it's an art form. And to... Yet other people, it's a social experience, period. And this kind of dovetails into what we were talking about earlier, right? Because for people for whom D&D is a game, period, you'd be like, well, why, if this is just a game, if this is just a competitive experience involving dice with some fantasy atmosphere tacked on, why would I want to have to deal with something as difficult as, you know, deviant sexual behavior or...
Yeah.
As warfare, or as rape, or as violence, or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas someone who sees it primarily as an art form would say, well, you have to deal with those things, or else, you know, you're creating disposable trash. Mm-hmm. And someone who sees it as a social experience would say, well, what it really has to do with is making the most comfortable social environment possible, making sure that the contract is upheld, and that no one feels, everyone's having fun, and no one feels unnecessarily uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And because of those vastly different approaches, you know, an event that's innocuous to one person could seem totally offensive
to another,
a trigger to someone else,
right.
Or it could simply seem absurd and meaningless and unnecessary to another person.
Yeah.
And yet, at the end of this whole thing, is this other part to it that I wanted to get to, was that at the end of the day, RPGers tend to come together for certain very, very important topics.
That's true.
Or expected
or
releases. Events, definitely. I mean,
Gen Con, you'll find
exactly.
all of the above there.
Yeah.
Isn't that coming
and
up
they,
soon?
Which and
Gen Con's going on now.
Okay.
And they converge on the same communities most of the time.
I mean,
the same message boards, the same... I mean, certainly it's becoming stratified in that you'll have... You know, communities devoted just to golf gamers, or just to story gamers,
right.
or just to indie gamers, or just to the hardcore D&D gamers, you know.
Yeah. Right. And
or just to people who want to min-max, or whatever. But why the stratification? I mean, like I said, it's a function of the huge number of different people that play the game. Is the stratification a good thing? Should it continue... to proliferate until you have, you know, every group is just a cluster of like-minded individuals? I mean, I think that's debatable.
Yeah.
I think that's when... I think that's a terrible thing for the future of the game from an economic perspective.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah. I agree with that.
The more niches form, the more you have these smaller and smaller... independent groups that have one particular isolated play style, the harder it becomes for anyone's game to sell to enough of an audience to be profitable.
Yeah. I don't think that would happen, though, anyway, because as it is right popular right now, popular things go in and out. Right. So, and there's always overlap somewhere between different styles.
But is that better for the groups? I don't know. I mean, is it better to play with a bunch of like-minded people and know that you're going to have a comfortable game, or to play with a bunch of people who are going to make your gaming experience uncomfortable, but are going to introduce you to new kinds of play? I don't know. Rudy, we've only got 3 minutes left on this topic, and
I don't really
you haven't had much to say.
Really. I think you pretty much said it.
I thought you had some strong opinions on this.
Not really, no.
But something must make you angry. There's always something that makes you angry.
No.
No?
No, not really.
No. Okay. I can cut it.
2 minutes and 51 seconds of dead air.
Yep.
Yeah,
dead air.
Dead air.
I was going to say something as to the whole like-minded thing. I mean, I'm more of the in-between guy anyway, and you do need somebody that's going to give you that little bit of grief, I think.
Right, you need to be pushed.
Right.
You need to have your comfort zone expanded a little bit, or stretched.
Yeah.
And pulled.
Yeah, I think that's all there is to add to that now, so really.
I mean, we are seeing people who have sort of made a career out of not so much stretching someone's comfort zone as tearing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't so much. I try to tend to fit into others, which tends to work pretty well. You got to be flexible anyway.
Right.
Someone.
Well, Rudy and I have a history of disturbing people's comfort zones and being trolls, basically. But I mean, it is difficult. There are certain types of play that are going to seem to anyone as being disruptive and detrimental to the game. I mean, certainly, while there are people that have seen that in Rudy and I in some game, we've seen it too. I mean, I know that I have a serious problem with people who approach the game from a pure statistical min-max perspective, I feel.
Yeah.
Especially when it's a game that has a lot of cumbersome rules burdened to it to begin with, that someone who fixates on the rules text of the game can be absolutely, you know, poisonous. Toxic gameplay, to the ability to keep a game running smoothly. Or
that's something completely different.
Keep it running as a game at all.
It's a really bad idea to have that, because they separate themselves from the actual game, because the role-playing has the two parts there. You have your statistical side, and then you have the actual acting side, as I like to call
it. Right, well, the role-playing. The role-playing and the role-playing game.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
The RP and the RPG.
I just didn't want to use the same term to describe itself.
Right.
But that's when you have someone who's just doing one of those two things.
Yeah.
It just destroys the whole thing altogether.
Right.
Yeah.
Unless the game only has one thing.
Like, right. Yeah. Well, then play Warhammer.
Right.
You know, play Chainmail.
Exactly.
Let that be that. 13, 12, 11, 10, 9.
This was a disappointing topic.
Count 7. Control to Major Tom.
4.
Commencing
3. 2. 1.
Our last topic for the cycle.
Yep.
First, resetting the clock.
Yes, reset the clock.
Yep.
My topic was GM or no GM? GMless games or games with GMs? Which is preferable? Mm. And in what situations do you want one or the other?
I'd say both have their strong points and both have their weaknesses. Depending on... I think it's really a matter of the group, too. Like, some groups almost prefer to be led by a GM.
Right.
Maybe in some groups might prefer not to have a GM at all. Some groups think the GM is, like, oppressive and, like...
Right. I mean, I think in any situation where you're going to... where you have one seasoned player and a lot of amateur players or newbies, it's best to have play a GM game.
Yeah.
Because then that's almost a way for the seasoned player to give all the other players an introduction to role-playing.
That's true.
Yeah, set an example for the other players.
Right, set an example and establish a form of play, especially since the form in role-playing is such a strange thing. It's so impossible to really
describe
and to quantify if you're approaching it as a new player. And since it can be so many different things, it almost helps to have some sort of seasoned player who has influence on how things progress in order to establish the tone, establish the manner of play, the progression of play, I guess you could say.
I don't necessarily agree. I think you could have a GM-less game that helps bring new players into the fold also. Because when we played Six-Page Manual, we had players, which is your game.
Right.
We had players that didn't really understand where the game was coming from, didn't maybe understand some of the real details of the game, but they understood improvisational acting.
So, right.
And that was the way you introduced it. And it was basically introduced as, this is kind of like, whose line is it anyway?
Yes, right.
But
and we'll do Six-Page Manual on here sometime.
Yeah,
we'll do an actual play of it, or we'll do a... Yeah. I'll put the text online.
But I think that game, improvisational games without a GM, I think are a good way for people to focus on the role-playing elements.
Yes.
More so than necessarily. Because GM games, what I think of when I think of those is really the GM is walking players through the mechanical steps.
Right.
Like you said, a more experienced player who has to walk players through each of the mechanical steps. This is how you create your character. This is, you know, what you do in response to this.
Mm-hmm.
This is how you fight the monsters. This is how...
Right.
But if you want to maybe season new players and role-playing a little more, I think that some GM-less games, especially those with a focus on improv
or
that kind of thing, I think might...
Can really provide an entrance point for the players. That's true. That's
because a lot completely of it, right, but those are two completely different type of games anyway, I think. Because... Mm. Both have newbie parts to them. Say you did the improvisational acting first.
Sure. Right.
You'd still have to introduce them to statting for the other type of game. Because the statting games...
Right.
That's why the GM
Six-Page Manual is an extremely simple game.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's Six-Page Manual.
But it's actually a 12-page
manual. With the charts, yeah.
Right. That's because there's reference tables.
Right.
But anyway...
That's true.
You have... What was I going to say? Yay, brain fart. A GM game would be best to introduce a player to stat games.
Right.
I think that would be the best way to start, honestly.
Right.
Because you get all parts of it there. You don't want to overload them, obviously.
Right.
So you want a simpler sort of stat game, but...
Right. For a game with a lot of complexity, having a GM is best if you're going to have a new group of players, a fresh group of players, or a lot of fresh players in your group, I think.
Starting out new players, like new to RPGs as a total, with D&D or GURPS, is a terrible idea.
You think that using D&D or GURPS as the... Because it is the gateway drug, you know, for most people. Everyone in this room played D&D first.
Yeah.
And most... players, you know, that was their gateway to RPGs, D&D.
Right.
Now that the market is more diverse and that there are a couple other marquee games, White Wolf and GURPS and a few others, they may start with one of those games instead. Mm. But that is the gateway. And do you think that's a bad... You're saying that's a bad gateway.
It
that
is
players
a bad
starting
gateway.
With D&D, with GURPS, with White Wolf, is a bad thing.
Do you think that's because of the GM?
It has nothing to do with the GM and more to do with the player. As my own experience, you actually have to read through reference material to understand these games somewhat.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I think today's culture, with the way it's going more and more to a less attentive span, less want to actually do long period things... This doesn't supplement into it. You want to build slowly up so that they have more of an understanding as to each of the parts
before
of it.
You're required
before you go into your full-blown...
Right. So you're saying that a better game is one that can be played before it's read.
Yes.
And I absolutely agree. Thank you, Mike.
I would not necessarily agree with that, but that's a different
For newbies, it is. For more experienced people, it's up to the play style of the
right.
individual.
I guess we are getting off of the GM versus GM-less topic.
I was trying to go...
I think that the big manual games are fine, but as a first game, they have a real tendency to teach players some really, really terrible habits, like the min-max play, or the, you know, the rules lawyer is a cliche, but, you know, the existence of the manual and the depth and length and complexity of the manual, I think, breeds some dysfunctional play styles. I think that's the starting point for a lot of players that, if they had been weaned on something else, would not have developed some really bad habits. I think...
I don't know that there necessarily are any bad habits in role-playing. I think there's just different play styles that don't really work together so much.
Yeah, that's...
Like min-maxing, if you're in a group full of min-maxers, then you're going to enjoy yourself.
Right.
If you're a min-maxer. If you're
rules
in a group
lawyer is a personality
with some
thing.
Thespians and some, you know, rules lawyers and maybe some other people,
but
you might not so much enjoy. But.
Yeah. And, of course, you're going to need a good GM if you do decide to do, like...
But I think there are bad habits that are contrary to play. I think any habit that takes you away from playing the game and towards, you know, fighting over the game, you know...
Yeah.
Or is a bad habit. Anything that consistently and frequently breaks the flow of play is a bad habit, regardless of what group you're in. Yeah. But we are having another discussion, aren't we?
How about this, though, within the discussion? Mm-hmm. What type of GM would be best to introduce to newbies?
Mm. What type?
Like, there are some GMs who are more loose with everything, and then you have your strict ones who say you have to follow these fucking things during this fucking thing,
I think somewhere
or you're not
in between.
Playing the game.
I think somewhere in between that, because you don't want
clearly,
somebody who's too loose.
It's going to lead one way or the other.
I'm not sure if that dichotomy is necessarily what we're looking at, though. I mean, that's like saying, well, what's best, a teacher who lets the students run wild in the classroom or a teacher who breaks out the ruler? And the honest truth is the good teacher doesn't do either, because the good teacher has gained the students... I don't want to say respect, but they've gained the students' attention because they have a dynamic personality that is strict and permissive in the right balance, but also that goes beyond simply being strict or being permissive, but that cultivates students. And I think you want to say the same thing. The good DM is a cultivating DM, you know, the one that focuses on trying to enhance play at every opportunity and enhance the quality of play for his players.
Right.
And not in fact, that GM isn't going to think too much about, am I being a strict DM or am I being too loose? He's thinking about what's going
to playing to the play styles of the player.
Right, and what's going to propel the game
that's
forward
what
and
I
what's
mean,
going to enhance the game.
That's what I mean by loose sort of, because
I think
a stricter one is going to be more like you have to follow this and this and this.
Right, and I think the actual dichotomy is a good DM a DM who's thinking mostly about, you know, thinking internally or externally, meaning thinking about what he came to the game prepared to bring to the game versus what versus a GM who focuses on the expectations and play styles of his players. And the external GM, I feel, is almost always going to be the better GM. That's not to say that GM shouldn't expect anything out of the game for himself. But the GM who walks into it with a lot of internal personal expectations that have nothing to do with the social dynamic, the group dynamic, the play styles, the expectations for play is going to be a terrible...
He's going to be disappointed.
Terrible. He's going to be personally disappointed, and he's going to disappoint his players.
Yeah.
And that was the timer. Hey. We're out of topics.
Yep.
So time to break out new ones. I think that was mine.
Yes, mine here. Each part can actually think of a new topic.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is looking.
Oh yeah, I shouldn't leave too much dead air here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need something for randomizing topics or for giving us topics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need some listeners so that we can have a mailbag.
Yeah.
Yes. We would much appreciate that.
Mr. RPG Podcast Dude, if you're listening right now, please let us on your RPG Podcast site, because if you don't, my mom will beat me. I'm serious. I'll get hurt. I sent it to you in the email. I told you that she was a violent woman, that she would hurt me. But if you're listening to this now, this is just a final plea to please let us on there. So I have bruises on me right now.
No, you don't.
No, yeah, you don't.
Show us your bruises.
Oh, they can't see it.
Show me your bruises.
Oh, she's trying to say they're emotional bruises. Boo-hoo.
No, you're not taking your pants off. Keep your pants off.
Well, I've got bruises down there.
No, you don't.
No, you don't. And if you do, it's from your own act.
Yeah, it's self-abuse. Oh. It's not domestic
violence. Not other people. Dead air, dead air. This is Crotch Chop City up in here.
Bel Air.
You'll home, smell you later.
Okay, I don't think this is working. Let's just talk about shit.
Yeah. Let's suck in.
Because we're going to have more dead air than anything.
Our topics will evolve
organically out of conversation. Yes.
Yeah.
Mike can put his Zelda hat back on.
So, what should we be talking about next?
I don't know. I mean,
I was thinking something to do with the manuals themselves, since I believe we just got off something about that, correct?
The manuals? Yeah.
Yeah.
We just finished talking about... Well, we were talking about the length of manuals and how they can be conducive to play. And we have the running joke about how long a manual should be.
Yeah, I think we all roughly agree on the
estimate
of a size of a manual, though.
Rudy strongly objects to my idea of the manual that can be printed on the back side of the character
sheet. I don't object to that, but I don't think that all manuals should necessarily have to...
I actually do object to that, because that limits yourself way too much. But obviously that's not a strict thing.
What I mean is that the... rules for play, the mechanics, should fit on the back of the character sheet. Because there's limitations to people's memory and their ability to internalize the complexity of a game.
Yeah. And for information, I ended up fleshing out the Harkin there that we covered last week, or 3 weeks ago, depending on how you viewed it. It ended up being about 3 pages, more or less.
Right. When did we actually record that? Like 2 days ago? Was it Tuesday?
No, it was
Tuesday?
Like a week ago.
It was a week ago.
Yeah.
It was last Friday?
And we tried to purport it to be...
I think so.
No, I believe it was Sunday.
Was it Sunday? Oh,
either way, it was. Sunday. We purported to be 3 weeks, but that's besides the point.
Well, we have 3 episodes on there.
Right. Yeah.
They were all posted on the same day and recorded on the same night.
Exactly.
That's true.
But that ended up being a... about 2.5, 3 pages or so, I believe.
Right.
Well, and that, I think the whole your one-page mechanics thing would have really limited me on that.
Maybe. I mean, I'm not talking about all of the variants for play or all of the, you know, what am I thinking of here? Not options, although options too. You know, the lists and the...
Like the cheat sheet.
Yeah, the lists, I understand. You're not including that.
You know, like your
charge and reference.
Your monster manual or whatever the equivalent is. All your
modular content.
Yes, all your modular content.
So you're talking about like a cheat sheet that can show you this is what you
this is how you play the game.
Oh, okay.
This is the mechanical foundation of the game.
Right.
This is everything you need to internalize in order to play.
Right.
Because it doesn't really hurt if you're looking back at the modular content during play.
Right.
But if debates arise about the fundamental ways to handle certain situations, which happens all the time in, say, Dungeons & Dragons, and in a lot of the, games from that line, that that branch of the RPG tree. Although that's pretty much the root. There's not much.
Right.
There's not many other branches.
Yeah.
But most games that trace their lineage back to D&D have a lot of the same problems about having mechanics that are so cumbersome that you have to play with the manual on the table.
That's true.
Because you
need, and I think that's a problem. I mean, what makes a good manual? What makes a good document?
I think a document has lots of in-play examples.
Lots of in-play.
And you can follow the actual play examples and learn to play the game.
So what would be an existing published game that meets that criteria?
Mm. If I remember correctly, the manual for Dogs in the Vineyard is kind of like that.
Is it? I haven't read Dogs in the Vineyards yet. It seems pretty compelling from what I've read about
it. Yeah, it seems like a pretty awesome game.
But it contains a lot of actual play mechanics. I recall GURPS being pretty good in that regard also.
Yeah
there were a lot of examples in GURPS. Right. I do remember reading through that.
What's a game that really fails in that regard?
D&D.
Yeah, that's clearly
D&D,
one, but...
I remember the 3rd edition manuals providing some examples of play, but they weren't very... There were a lot of examples of individual bits of play, like, you know, what's one of their default character names? I don't remember.
Like
but,
Jozen?
Yeah, Jozen. Jozen cast magic missile. This is what it would look like. Yeah. Well, there were not many examples that were really comprehensive and did a good job of holistically presenting play.
Hmm.
So,
this is what happens at the table. This is what this guy's doing.
Right,
this is when he passes the dice. This is
and integrating all the different bits of D&D. D&D had way too many different bits, mechanical bits and pieces.
Right. And,
there were no good examples integrating all those bits and pieces into a cohesive play.
Right.
At least not in the manuals. I mean, obviously there are podcasts and plenty
for reference. I think for the most part we'll be referring to D&D manuals as per the 3.5 stuff.
Hmm.
Well,
for the most part.
I am a 3.0 fundamentalist.
Yeah. I've read 4.0.
I bailed after 3.0. I played a little bit of AD&D, a little bit of 2nd edition. I played a great deal of 3.0, and I have played some 3.5, mostly when the DM is like, I'm playing 3.5. I have to.
I'm Muhammad bin al-Sahir al-Sahid Saeed Khan, the 3.0 cleric fundamentalist. And I'm a cleric because they fucked up my arm in 3.5 and I'm just pissed
off. I actually do like 3.5, but I haven't read much of 3.0 because it's not very easy to find 3.0 these days.
Mm.
Yeah, no, it's pretty difficult.
You can find them in my closet.
You can find legal copies of them on my hard drive. Completely legal.
Uh-huh. Completely legal.
Yep.
No, I actually bought those manuals. I mean, I don't... But so that's what you think should be in a manual. Lots of really concrete, good...
You know what I think should definitely be in, and I think everybody can agree on this, fucking awesome pictures.
Yeah.
There should be awesome pictures,
absolutely.
Pictures.
What's badass to be in visual, though? I mean, I'm more of a classic AD&D 1970s look. I like that somewhat.
I like that look. I like the look. Somewhat. Honestly, I don't hate the look of any of the D&D manuals, even 4th edition. 4th edition...
4th edition wasn't that bad.
It's goofy, actually. And it looks sort of like bad comic book art.
Right.
But when you start getting into over-digitalized
art, that's when it really gets annoying to me. I love
digital art, as far as putting it up on a computer,
right.
Is awesome. But putting it on pages, not
right.
So good.
Clearly computer-generated. Art sucks. Badass art is good.
Need the badass art.
In some cases, it will make the manual. Like, look at any monster manual.
Right.
And people will argue to death about, well, this monster manual is better than that one.
Yeah.
But what they're really arguing about is not how effectively the monsters were statted, is not, you know, the flavor text associated
with
the monster.
It's about how cool they
look. It's how cool the art looks.
Yeah.
And good art will make or break it also, because it makes it easier to describe the monster instead of reading a physical description on words. You have an actual picture, which makes it so much easier to describe.
I know that's why the 3.0 had such a badass monster manual too.
is because it had kick-ass art. Of course, it really had some kick-ass concepts, you know. Conceptually, the monsters were very interesting. So yeah, art's important, depending on the game. I mean, there are some games, though, you don't really need kick-ass art for.
No.
I mean, like Jeep Forum games aren't really improved by the art, you know? You don't need the art.
No, that's true. Yeah, I don't think Gang Rape was all about the art.
No, I don't think so. Or that was the mothers.
The mothers, yeah.
That was about mind art.
Yeah, that was about the art that's up here.
Yeah.
I don't know what a manual needs. I mean, what do I want in a manual? I know what I could tell you. I could talk for hours about what I don't want in a manual.
Yeah, but what do you want in a manual is very...
I want a very concrete... simple explanation of the core mechanics of the game.
Hmm. Yeah, I can.
And then I want that to take up, you know, a chapter or so very early. And then I want a lot of possibilities for play. Hmm. I want everything beyond that to be expansions upon that mechanical core. Hmm. And this is how you can have fun with this mechanical core. This is how you can take this simple mechanical core and really enjoy it in play. Hmm. Whether that means listing a lot of possible variants for play, whether that means talking about the kind of storylines this game can generate, or talking about, or even, you know, listing all the different, I don't want to use D&D terminology here, like feats and skills, but all the different options. Mm. In fact, that's almost what most of the manuals should be, is an options menu, you know?
Yeah. I want this in my game, I want that, I leave that.
Right, it should be a bunch of different
things you can toggle on and off to enjoy it, improve your enjoyment of the game.
It's kind of like a Vegas buffet.
I was going to say, kind of like one of the screens from... in 64 Bond, where you're turning off weapons.
Right. Well, I want the golden gun this time.
Or the laser pistols.
Or like Smash Brothers, where you can turn off the items.
And turn them on. And that's what it all... Or even lists, you know, like the items list, you know.
Right.
Things that you can add to play, things that you can bring to play. I don't think a manual needs to be short, as long as most of it is enhancements for play and not tedious... mechanical complexity.
Jargon, or
burden. The manual shouldn't be burdensome. You should open up a manual and be overwhelmed with a bunch of cool shit. You know, it should be like, oh, that's cool. And not only should it be cool, but everything in the manual should be something you can insert into play. Yeah. None of this, no teasing the player with stuff that's pure atmosphere, pure setting wank, pure, for the enjoyment of the author. And in a lot of cases, you know, like really high-end NPCs in D&D or White Wolf or GURPS, or a lot of games have, well, GURPS doesn't. GURPS is the perfect example of what I'm talking about for a good manual, where you open it up and it's just tons and tons of stuff you can include
tables you can insert in play.
Right.
Yeah. And here are lists and lists of powers and traits and abilities. And all of this can be thrown on your character right away and enjoy. Games that overwhelm you with stuff that will never be included in play... It would almost be better if they had written a manual that was 2.5... No, it wouldn't almost be better. It would be better if their manual was a 2.5 page PDF posted on a Jeep Forum blog, you know?
Yeah.
Jeep Forum White Wolf.
Yeah, well, most White Wolf games could be reduced to that, honestly.
I haven't played so much
White Wolf. I mean, White Wolf, I think...
I think B-Boy would give us an argument about that.
And clearly he would.
Brandon will be here, and he can give us an argument about
the... We have a very specific level
benefits
of this.
Yeah, of White Wolf.
That's a low-paid situation.
Yes.
Seems like people with White Wolf, they either have a big hard-on for it, or they hate it.
Well, White Wolf's manuals are 90% cumbersome, pointless mechanics setting link that you can incorporate.
I don't think the mechanics are so cumbersome. I think it's more cumbersome.
Well, I mean, it's not more cumbersome than
because
say,
they're so integrated.
Think about how many parts you have though in a White Wolf game. Yeah. There's at what was there like 7 different types of stats that you had to keep track of? Well, not stats
right.
per se, but different objectives per se. I guess you would say. It's different things. You had different bubbles, right?
Right. You had lots of different bars.
And some of them add together.
Right. I mean, it's clearly explained on the character sheet. But right.
White Wolf is nowhere near as mechanically cumbersome as D&D.
Right.
But it's
I
still
actually
too
like character creation.
I actually think White Wolf is more cumbersome than D&D.
Really?
Yeah. It just... D&D was easy to get into... as soon as I was able to understand how it worked.
Right.
White Wolf, I understand how it works, and it's still cumbersome.
Is that
White Wolf is not an intuitive game
no.
in any respect, and that's the problem.
I think character creation is very intuitive.
You really think character creation is intuitive?
With the bubbles.
I mean, it's too
I will give you that.
It's too loose. It's like because you have these skill lists,
it's
and
really
it's like, well, do you feel like your character is proficient? And trying to determine the level of proficiency and turn that into bubbles is ridiculous.
I think it's a little easier when we were playing with White Wolf. It was we were dealing with the characters that branched off. You picked an option that branches off into separate options there, which branches off further. Correct?
Yeah, because we were playing Geist.
We were playing Geist exactly. I mean, there are other White Wolf games. I'm sure not all of them branch off. Like I said, my experience is limited. But that right there was not good, I thought.
I
did not
mean,
like that.
I didn't... I mean, every game is going to be a function of the DM you play with.
Yeah.
And I won't say much more than that about White Wolf, but...
Yeah, I suppose
listening.
So.
Well, he is listening, and that's... Oh,
that's
we
fine.
We don't have to edit that out.
That's fine.
I don't know how to.
I don't know how to.
Well,
I could probably do that.
But I mean, I think White Wolf contains some inherently poor design choices. I think most White Wolf games contain... I think a lot of what is written to the manual is not conducive to play. I think a lot of it is limitations on play. And on top of limitations on play, a lot of it is stuff that actually takes what was a cool concept thematically and adds a lot of goofball stupidity to it. Take Demon the Falling and...
Yeah.
The concept of playing a character who is, you know, this dualistic character who is the individual and the demon that's haunting him, troubling him, that's some kind of reflection of his own desires or whatever, or isn't, you know, that playing a character who's demonically possessed seems to be, like, a cool way to... there are so many possibilities there. There's endless possibilities. Then you begin to pace through the manual, and you see the goofy houses and the... it is houses in Demon. I don't remember.
What are they called? I don't know. Christ, they have different names in all.
But, you know, and all of them have these ridiculous histories that are written in this so serious voice, like, Vlad the Impaler, Lord of the, you know, the dark realms of sin, spelled with a Y.
Yes, clearly.
Ruled
over the roots.
From the pit.
Right.
And after he came up from the pit, these people fucking bowed down and this and that.
Right, and it's like, well, where do you go from there? Because that's almost... The game is, at one hand, immediately demanding a serious tone, but presenting you with something that's so inherently stupid and ridiculous.
Right.
Whereas if you had all that stuff and said, yeah, go wild with it, this is a stupid, goofy, you know, horror game that isn't to be taken serious, have fun with Vlad the Impaler.
Right.
You'd be like, okay, I can do that. Or if you just had... the broad outlines of what the game was about, I think you could get some really interesting dramatic stuff out of that. Out of having the guy and his demon and the interactions between them. I think you could, someone who wanted to use that to deal with a serious topic. Really could.
Hmm.
But they can't if they're expected to be serious and deal with these serious issues that this demon possessed character might have to deal with. Like, let's say the demon is leading him towards alcoholism or something. That would open the door for a really interesting maybe discussion or portrayal of alcoholism and how it affects the character. But that's very hard to do when the demon is actually, you know, Lord Sithbarn of the Pith, who has drunken so much ale during his days, you know, whatever, when it's so much ridiculous bullshit.
I think that would be actually a really interesting character to play, Lord Sithbarn of the Pith. So much fucking ale.
I'm right there with you, but that's because it's so ridiculous.
It's a humorous character. And their expectation isn't for you to take that and make a humorous character.
Yeah.
So I think that most of what exists in those manuals is detrimental to the kind of play that they're hoping to get out of the game.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that from the sound of it. I guess I have my homework assignment for next week, but read more White Wolf.
Or read less White Wolf.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't have to.
Should we cut it here? I think we just...
I don't know. I don't think we've done it. I mean, this isn't a very long podcast. How much do we have?
We're at an hour.
Oh, that's an hour.
That's what I was saying.
Should we cut that here and maybe record another one?
Yeah.
On a real topic?
Or maybe some actual play? Or maybe just leave it at that.
So that was our meandering...
That was Mom's Basement Podcast.
Episode four. What are we going to call this one?
We should call it Topic Wink.
Topic Wink?
Yeah.
Unless we can come up with a better idea.
Yeah. Alright, we can call it Topic Wink.
Roger.
But that was episode four.
Thank you for listening
and please RPG podcast.
Please, guys.
Mr. Podcast.
Listen, I get hit with a belt every night. And it hurts. It hurts my soul.
Let us be free.
Fucking Lupe Fiasco song.
Ah, boy, that's kind of tragic.